Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed. Hello and good morning. Here we go. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock, Friday morning. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. Where is spring?
Well, I was saying it this morning. We're all tired of this. You know, you're the mayor. Come on, Bob. Come on. Make it happen.
51 is supposed to be the high today, I just heard on your great radio station.
I know.
It's supposed to rain tomorrow, iffy Sunday. But the good news is, I hope, the Knicks will win tonight and Sunday.
You're dressed for the game tonight.
Ready for the game already. 7 o'clock tonight, 3:30 in the afternoon on Sunday. Heartbreaker two nights ago at the Rangers game. 7 minutes to go in the second overtime and a goal against them. So now they're really behind. We'll see. It's going to be hard to pull out, but, you know, they can do it. Anything's possible. And they did play well, and it's a fun team. I sat with Mike Richter and Diana and my daughter, and it was interesting listening to a professional who knows the Knicks, what was going on and what the goalies were doing, and that sort of. He's a very smart guy, nice guy.
Let's hope that both teams can kind of continue their ways. The Rangers,
they good, and
the Rangers have a tough go.
Rangers have a tough go, but Yankees have been winning, and the Mets just started a series of wins. You know, you got the first ones. You don't get the first one, you don't get the second.
You know, I was so disappointed in you this week. I know that there are a lot of people, you get that kind of word all the time, but you were out at Coney Island.
I was.
A perfect opportunity to go on the roller coaster, and you didn't.
The roller coaster. Anybody can do the roller coaster.
The slingshot. You could have.
The slingshot.
You and Marty Markowitz could have strapped yourselves into this thing, and you could have had somebody pull the trigger and shoot you.
I thought about it. Not that seriously.
For about 2 seconds.
I think it's for people a little bit younger than me. Yeah. But,
That's a bit.
Coney Island is, people kept saying that it'd never come back. And there's a city councilman, Dominic Recchia. He and Marty Markowitz really are the ones behind all of this. And they kept saying, no, Coney Island, Coney Island. And if you think about it, yes, Disney World is very different, but Disney World's a long flight away, and if you just want to go and have fun one time. Coney Island used to be an enormous vacation spot. It fell on hard times. We have this Coney Island revitalization plan. It's been decades since anyone really invested in Coney Island. But the city purchased 7 acres within the amusement district. We signed a 10-year lease with somebody called the Central Amusement International to operate the amusement parks. We had one last year, Luna Park, which is right next door to the Scream Zone, drew 450,000 people, more than any time since the Steeplechase Park closed. It was enormous success. The beach, you know, along that area, that's got something like 14 million people. But there were 450,000 right in this one area. And now with the Scream Zone, it's two new roller coasters and the slingshot. And the kids are going to love this. This is another big hit. And what's more, these are companies, they really do hire from the local area.
Community, right.
So, you know, it gives jobs. It helps. It gives the stores start. Once people come, crime goes down. People open new stores. Gives you more reason to go there. You got to get around and start going up. And once you get the momentum going, then good things happen. And Coney Island really is a great example of taking an area that, in all fairness, was very...
Yeah, we talked about back in the 70s, and you didn't want to go there.
Yeah. Today, safe, clean, fun, and the more people that come, the more those things are going to be true.
Yeah, no, it's a great investment.
So rather than me going up, listeners, I would think.
I actually would do it. I mean, I'm not afraid.
I understand, though. Arrange that for this afternoon? I have some, I'm sure if I call the guy and say they get some publicity.
Only if you'll go with
me. Well, let me say this. I'd watch.
You'd come and watch?
Yeah,
you'd come and pull the trigger,
I'd be happy to do that.
The release button.
It would be fine.
There goes gambling. Thank goodness.
If you forget to strap in. It goes like 90 miles an hour straight up in the air.
It also costs $20. I think that for one ride or something.
I don't know how many more than one you'd want.
That's true. Spend your last buck. Speaking of spending dollars, yesterday you were talking, today is Earth Day, and you were talking about alternative energies and oil. And I read the story this morning about heavy oil that city buildings use.
There's three kinds of oil. Number six, number four, and number two.
You're an expert now.
I know this from 4 or 5 years ago. Number six oil is phenomenally polluting. 1% of the buildings, some city schools, about 200 city schools, but a lot of private buildings, but 1% of all our buildings use number six oil, and that contributes something like 85% of all of the pollutants from buildings, which in the city is 85%. Remember, we have only 20% from transportation and 80% from buildings. It's exactly reverse than any other city. And it's cheaper, and the boilers have to be redone. So to get people away from that, you know, the building owners say they don't have any money to do it, and if they do it, they can't pass on the cost to the tenants, and the tenants don't want to pay it, and everybody's pointing fingers. But this would really be a very big deal in terms of reducing the junk in the air that you and I and kids breathe. And you can see, you can plot where these buildings are, and then you plot where the kids that go to hospitals with asthma attacks come from. There's no question.
There's a correlation. Direct.
Yeah, absolutely. And also near big roads with a lot of congestion, the health of the people in neighborhoods is worse. You got to do something about it.
So why did you take the outlay to 2030?
Best deal we could negotiate, I guess. Okay. You know, if you did it tomorrow, we'd all be a lot better off. But in all fairness, it would take time, even if everybody was willing to go ahead. It does take money. We have some programs to help people pay for the conversion. The idea is to get rid of the number six oil by, I think, 2015, and the number four oil by, whether it's 2030, I forget the dates exactly. But, you know, if you went to number two oil or natural gas, those are much cleaner fuels and put a lot less crap in the air. And, you know, forget about global warming. It's the air you and your kids breathe. It's the water you and your kids drink. It's, you know.
It ultimately, it makes sense. We had a story here this morning. You're probably aware of this, but some organization, smoking organization, said that they felt that the United States would be virtually completely smoke-free, not in homes and stuff like that, but publicly, by 2020. That is an extraordinary number.
Well, I think the numbers are a very big percentage of the public lives in cities. And not all, but most cities, even in tobacco-growing states, have signed on. And the thing with smoking is if you don't smoke, but the guy next to you smokes, it hurts you. So that's an easier problem to attack because you're more likely to say, hey, I want to
stop. Yeah.
Stop it. I don't want to breathe your smoke. I happen to believe personally that if you want to smoke, it's not a smart thing to do, but if you want to smoke, yeah, I don't think we should take away your right to do that. I think you're not, you know, as I said, not too smart. But if you have kids who can't defend themselves and they're in the same room or the same car, someday somebody's going to have a lawsuit against parents. You know, you smoke.
Well, it's already started with smoking with kids in the car.
Smoking with kids in the car. There are a lot of people that has already
started.
Yes.
And so I think the next step, the only logical next step, is if you have children in your home, if you smoke in your home. Now that gets a little dicey.
What I would worry about is my kids suing me down the road. Yeah, you're going to say no kids would sue their parents. You, in our day and age, when everybody's suing everybody.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I came down with cancer, mommy, daddy, particularly if mommy, daddy is wealthy. And there's something to go after.
And you're not in the will.
Well, I think something like more than half the states have enacted smoking bans and private, you know, restaurants and bars and that sort of thing. Less in the South than in the rest of the country. But there's been a lot of progress. You know, people are living longer. You come back to, everybody says, oh, it's nanny gate, it's this, it's that. The bottom line is, in New York City, on average, we live 1 year and 7 months longer than we did in 2002. 1 year and 7 months times 4.8 million people is an awful lot of man years. And we live in New York City a year longer on average than the country as a whole. Why? Smoking helps. Lower murder rate, crime way down, that helps. faster response time from firefighters and the inspections. People think firefighters' main job is to put out fires. I've always thought firefighters' main job is to prevent them in the first place with their inspections and education programs.
Building codes.
Building codes have changed, all that. Fewer traffic deaths than we started keeping statistics for traffic deaths when there weren't cars. So it was horse-drawn carriages. And the city's population was less than today. And today, there are fewer traffic deaths than then. So, you know, we talk about, oh, I don't like this, and you argue about bicycle lanes. Red light cameras, if we could get more red light cameras, you would bring down the death rate on the roads a lot more. Unfortunately, Albany only lets us do some. But, you know, the bottom line is you have to make choices. Is government going to interfere and improve your life expectancy, or do you think that government should just let you not interfere, and the consequences, whatever they are, they are? And those are legitimate things to argue about. I happen to think that up to a point, government has a responsibility to help you live a longer, healthier life. And all of these things we did put together, bars on windows if you have children, you know, all of that kind of stuff adds up to you living longer.
Seatbelts in cars.
Seatbelts in cars. A invented or first idea came from?
Bloomberg Association.
No, School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins.
The Johns Hopkins, which you've been a big supporter of. And, and did you help create that, I believe, didn't you?
Well, actually, the money was originally given by the Rockefeller family. They created five schools of public health. This was the first at Johns Hopkins.
A lot has come out of that institution.
Yeah, I mean, but airbags and better enforcement of DWI. In fact, my foundation is working on, I was down in Washington a couple days ago, gave a speech with Bob Zelek, who runs the World Bank. Automobile traffic deaths are going to be the fifth largest killer in the world in another few years. There are something like two people that get killed every minute, but there's 65 new cars that go on the roads every minute in the world.
But that number this year was the lowest it has been since I'm talking about nationally. National traffic deaths.
Could be.
Lowest has been in the 1940s.
Cars are built better to, you know, the standards. And when the Consumer Reports and people like that rate the safety of cars, people may change their buying decisions. And so automobile companies have economic interest to make them safer, better enforcement of seatbelt laws. And one of the things that's gone up is accidents where people are texting. One thing to talk on the phone, but another thing to look at your keyboard and type. You can't look at the road.
The big discussion, though, is the one that you touched on, and that is, at what point? And how far does it go? That's the tough one.
With smoking, for example, I think that you have a right to smoke. I think society also has the right to protect those who do not want to smoke. And if you smoke next to them, they unfortunately are smoking. So that's where I would draw the line. Rational people could pick a different place, but you'd be hard-pressed to roll back the anti-smoking rules. That's not going to happen here.
And nor should it, in my mind. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. We'll get right back to you. Let me remind all that if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, come along. All are welcome. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Best to get in line. Start to get in line right now. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. Coming right back. All right, we continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Speaking of Earth Day, there's some talk in the papers today about garbage, which is always a huge issue, and the thought and talk about gasification.
We're trying lots of different things.
I thought we tried that already, didn't we?
Incineration. This is different. You know, the technologies keep getting better, and at some point they make sense. Also, some things make sense for small cities. New York City generates 22,000 tons of solid waste a day. So for us, solutions have to be
big.
Big. That's exactly right. It costs an awful lot to pick up the garbage and then to truck it or rail it to places and then to pay those places to take our solid waste. Now, some of it you can remove out of the solid waste pile by recycling. Some of it does go to places. There is an incineration plant in New Jersey. I think some goes there. But most of it goes Pennsylvania, South Carolina. I forget. Some states down there who have big landfills. And
Virginia, I think.
Yeah, for a lot of money per ton, they take it. But it costs a lot, and it pollutes to get the stuff there, less by rail, but you got to get it to the rail, too. So we're looking at all of these different things, and you have to, some of them eventually probably will make some sense. In the end, however, at the moment, I don't mean end, at the moment, virtually all of our, we have a decent amount of recycling, not as much as you could or should, but most of it gets trucked to rail, some by barge, some directly by truck to the rail, and then goes to Pennsylvania or Virginia, wherever, and we pay a lot of money.
Saw a sad story this week, and I'm sure you read the same story about Bazzini, the company, the peanut company that supplies the peanuts to the folks at Yankee Stadium. It's a sad story because it's one that's repeating itself in the Bronx especially. Companies moving out, people losing jobs because the costs, regulation, and the like is just too much. From their point of view.
In this case, Bazzini had, he bought, I think they bought another company, and they had a facility in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and it was all ready to go. He's still keeping his headquarters there and lots of people there, but it is a very big problem for us. We have to keep this city business friendly. When people say, oh, just raise the taxes, jobs will flee the city, whether you like it or not. They can move. We're working very hard to keep Hunts Point. Here, New Jersey is trying to buy Hunts Point.
We lost Stella D'Oro.
Stella D'Oro is small compared to Hunts Point.
Hunts Point
is where all of the produce comes through, and there are people that want to move it to New Jersey, and New Jersey is offering great incentives to keep it down. My argument is that the workforce in New York is the best you can ever find, not disparaging people who live in New Jersey, and some of the people live in New Jersey and work in Hunts Point. But you're also the proximity of Hunts Point to the market. You know, getting from New Jersey in, there's a lot of traffic. The GW, the Tappan Zee, the Lincoln Tunnel, the Holland Tunnel. You just listen in the morning to the delays, and I think they'd be better off. They're really Bazzini, I think, is actually only about 25 employees are moving to Pennsylvania. And he does have some long-term plans to open retail stores in the city. So I think we're pretty confident that in 3 years, they'll probably have more jobs here, assuming the economy's okay, than they do today.
It's just emblematic of the issue that needs to be addressed.
I come back to Kingsbridge Armory. Really was something that scared a lot of people, and we've got to work through that. Yesterday I had breakfast with 20 different entrepreneurs from the Bronx, restaurateurs and people that had stores and worked in community groups and a hospital and that sort of thing. The Bronx is a phenomenal place. If you think about the number of people that came from the Bronx that are on the world stage, it's really quite amazing. It fell on hard times. It's a lot better than it was. If you go back to the 70s, it was a disaster. Plus, today it is a lot better, but we've got a long ways to go. And I think a good example is you look to Brooklyn. Brooklyn has become such a hot place, and our great challenge is to make the Bronx a hot place where people, young people, want to go and live, and then stores come. And
it's basically a real estate issue, isn't it? I mean, it's all of it together, but first and foremost, don't you have to get the living spaces right?
Well, immigrants have actually filled a lot of the living spaces in the Bronx. Without that, those buildings would be empty.
Right.
There is a lot of construction. We've worked very hard on affordable housing. A lot of it is in the Bronx. And, you know, it's easy also to forget that there's an awful lot of new companies. You drive up the Bruckner and look, you'll see new buildings going up and that sort of thing. So there still is plenty of stuff there. There's the Banknote Building, which is this big brick building with those tall painted chimneys. New York City started an incubator in there for small businesses. There's a dance company. One of the guys at the breakfast yesterday has a 5-person dance company close by to there. We're working on lots of different plans. We're trying, as you know, to get new universities to come here and open new campuses. That will create jobs. But you've got to be able to find land and a workforce and do it at a price that companies can afford and then attract them to come here because whether you like it or not, they have alternatives. And that's what we have to worry about and keep fighting all the time. Bob Steele, our deputy mayor for economic development, knows as much about development as anybody you or I will ever meet. And he's, you know, he's got lots of good ideas. Seth Pinsky with EDC, we're trying lots of different things. But you don't want to create jobs that can't employ the people that we have. So it's creating jobs. We need jobs at the high end because that's where the tax base is. And then you need jobs at the entry level end because we have an awful lot of people who are at entry level, need a job, may not have great command of the English language or formal education. They need jobs too. And, jobs at high prices just will not come. We have to find jobs that match that skill sets and everything in between.
All right, Mayor, why don't we sit still, take a break right here. We've reached the half hour, actually passed by. Again, a reminder, let's see here. There's one line open, 800-321-0710, if you've got a question for Mayor Mike. Coming up in just a little bit, but right here, 27 before 9 o'clock, Joe Bartlett. All right, we are back, 22 now before 9 o'clock in the morning. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here, and we got a bunch of folks on the phone. We'll get to them in just a little bit here. NYPD ticket fixing. What do you think? What can you tell us about
this? There seems to be a lot of evidence that there was a practice that should not have taken place, but there's an investigation going on. The district attorney of the Bronx, Bob Johnson, is doing that, and and police commissioner and I will not say anything that could jeopardize the investigation. What the commissioner did last July, I think it was, is we put in a new computer system so that the instant the ticket gets back to the station, it goes. And once it gets into the system, it'd be very hard to fix it, get rid of it, because it's too easy to track. So if that practice that's alleged to have taken place did take place, then at least we're convinced it won't in the future. Keep in mind, you can always have somebody, you know, they're about to write you a ticket and you say don't, and, you know, you convince them not to. At that level, that's just training and hoping you have the right people, and there'll always be somebody who says,
With this computer, does it mean that if indeed a ticket was going to be fixed, it had to be fixed before it went into the computer?
Well, the computer didn't exist.
Oh, it didn't.
These are all not parking tickets. These are moving violation tickets that we're talking about, which is, you could argue, a lot more serious because maybe you were drunk driving or maybe you're speeding. You could kill somebody, whereas parking may just, unless it's in front of a fire hydrant, which could be dangerous, or at a crossing. It's just an inconvenience. But, the commissioner, I've talked to him a lot, and he's convinced that when the cop gets back to headquarters with the tickets, they go right into the computer, and after that, it would be very hard to manipulate the system. Can't promise zero, but virtually not. And this really hasn't happened since last July, if it happened before. And I've got to be very careful because you don't want to prejudice the investigation.
It seems that this was part of the culture. I mean, from what you read.
I read what you read.
Okay, fair enough. You got some tweets. I know that you've been encouraging New Yorkers to tweet you at .gov, NewYorkCity.gov, NYC.gov.
Do you tweet?
I do not. No, I do.
You're
not
missing. Yeah.
I'm not missing a thing. I've got you.
I was at the Rangers game. They show tweets coming in about, you know.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, up on the screen during a break.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Anyway, people tweeted you about your meeting this week at the White House on immigration.
Not very nice to get an invitation to the White House. You sort of lots of security, but you walk in and you say, "Hey, I saw this on television." I remember the first president I ever met was Jimmy Carter. I was invited at the last minute to fill in at a fundraiser in the Grand Ballroom at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Must have been 1,000, 2,000 people, every table full. And instead of giving a speech, Jimmy Carter walked around and shook the hand of everybody. And I remember shaking his hand and introducing him to somebody else and saying, "Let me introduce the president of the United States."
It's an interesting departure from the normal.
Now, you know, I've gotten to know presidents since then, but it was a good meeting. About 100 people in the room. People from
what was the consensus around the table, if there were any?
there were two real issues about immigration. I think everybody in the room, now keep in mind, the White House picks the people there, so whatever. President gave a talk about, outline the problems, and then ask people for their comments and what they thought. Some people, if you want to keep the economy growing in this country, we have to get two groups of people in across the border. And remember, most people, or half the people, overstay visas. They don't come across a border. They just get a permission to come here, and we don't track them, so we don't even know how many. We track them coming in. We don't track them going out, which is a mistake. But anyways, we need people who will work in businesses like agriculture, seasonal businesses. They don't pay very much, but the farms can't justify higher compensation. And if we don't let them into this country, those farms will move out of our country because they just can't pick the crops. And then at the other end, we need the engineers and scientists and doctors and people who will create entrepreneurs who will create the industries of tomorrow. And there's also a group that feels that the 11 million undocumented aren't being treated fairly. I have my own views on that, but I think that it's true that they broke the law. It's also true that we helped them break the law, because in typical government fashion, the 86 Reform Act outlawed coming across the border and then made sure there was no funding to control the border. So everybody could say, oh, yeah, I got you what you wanted, you know, or the best I could do. We're not going to deport 11 million people. We have to find some ways to make them productive because they're here. And you can sit there and you can argue about they shouldn't be, but they are. And so there was a group that were interested in the undocumented who are here today, and they feel that some of the government raids aren't appropriate. It gets tricky. What do you do when a kid is born here? The kid's an American citizen. The parents, let's assume for the sake of argument, are undocumented. If you were to deport the parents, you can't just let the kids sit in the street.
Well, that's one of the problems.
Well, you could, I suppose, send the kid back, but say the kid, you can come back when you're an adult anytime you want. You know, you're a citizen, here's your passport, but your parents don't. So it's very controversial, and it's very, and there's no simple answers. Everybody says, let's get control of our borders. Hard to do. What you really need is...
You're not suggesting that they would sort of throw up your hands on control of the border.
No, quite the contrary. They've actually been making real progress in controlling the borders, the border particularly
numbers
with Mexico.
Down, yeah.
Numbers are way down. The ways to stop this is to get rid of the demand. What you do is you have companies. The law says you can't employ an illegal, but the companies have no ways of checking. If your Social Security card had your fingerprint on it, for example, the companies could just run it through a computer, and if you're an undocumented, illegal, they just don't give you the job. And you're not going to come here if you can't get a job. People don't come here to put their feet up.
Well, that's why some of the numbers are down.
Because of the economy. So, you know, it's what's called e-verify, electronic verification. If you did that, you could solve a very big part of the problem. And for companies, you know, most of them say, I'd rather have that than not. I don't want to break the law. I don't want to run the risk of breaking the law and having a penalty. So let's get E-Verify. If you did that, you would reduce the supply of jobs and fewer people would come, which would make getting control of the border easier to do. Now, in all fairness, at great expense, we have beefed up the Border Patrol. There are fences, there's electronics, there's people, there's airplanes. You know, a variety of things. So it isn't, we keep yelling and screaming, and it isn't like something isn't being done. A lot of people don't like what's being done, but they are getting control of the borders.
But the E-Verify seems to be a relatively simple part of the issue to fix.
You have to do the following things. You have to have the E-Verify kind of thing so that companies can, then you can enforce the law against the companies. That would reduce the demand the supply of jobs and reduce the number of people trying to get across the border. So that would make it easy to get control of the borders. And we should be in control of our borders. Then you have to have visas for these people. You guys said to the president, you go up to Canada. All these West Coast companies have opened offices in Vancouver. Canada's desperate to get the engineers to come there. They can't get in the United States. So companies are moving their business to Canada. this is national suicide. This is craziness. So you want H-1B visas, and you want to have the supply of labor for seasonal businesses. You know, you have to do all of these things at the same time, and we have to have a sensible policy of who we let into the country. You want a diversity of languages and of skills and of experiences, because all of this stuff adds to our culture, adds to our cuisine, and creates jobs. And in the end, no matter what some of the people say, immigration creates jobs for Americans. It just, there's just no, all the evidence is there to show that, and this country is not doing it, and it really doesn't make any sense.
Okay, let me.
But it was very nice to be invited. Thank you, Mr. President. It was fun. You know, I mean, listen, he's got a tough job. There is no easy answer here, and all of these things.
All right, let's take a break right here. We got some folks with some questions, and maybe we'll get to a couple of those tweets as well. It's 12 before 9 o'clock. We are coming right back. All right, here we go. Mr. Mayor, pick up the headphone, and we will go to the telephones, and we are going to start with Joe in Rockaway. Hello, Joe.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, a lot of people have a perception that fines are just for revenue-producing agencies go out and write more tickets. I think a solution to that would be that whatever monies are collected in fines go back to the people and reduction of their payroll taxes. This way, it would stop the incentive to over-fine people or over-enforce some areas of law, because you'd have to justify it, and the politicians would not get that extra money in the coffers. I was wondering.
Well, Joe, keep in mind the fines that we get do reduce everybody's taxes, because the monies that come in, whether they come in from taxes or fines, go into the same pot. Generally, fines, while the revenue is nice and it does reduce taxes, fines are used to dissuade people from doing things that the law doesn't want you to do. For example, parking in front of a fire hydrant. You can get a parking ticket. Cost you a lot of money. Hopefully, you don't park in front of a fire hydrant anymore, and then the fire department can get their lines plugged in and get the fire out and save people's lives. If you took the fines and reduced the people who get fines taxes, there'd be no incentive for them to not park in front of a fire hydrant. But, you know, people say that it's goes to the politicians. In the end, Joe, the programs go to the people. Now, they may not go to you. It may be a program that somebody else uses, but then that other person doesn't get anything from a program that you use. And the secret here is everybody wants more services. When you try to cut any services, you see the yelling and screaming. But the people that work and provide the services need to get paid, or they won't have jobs and aren't going to provide the service. And we have to find ways, if we want to keep the services this without paying more taxes or having more fines, and the fines, incidentally, you can avoid by just not doing what they're trying to keep you from doing. So taxes you can't walk away from. Fines, it's very easy to walk away from. Just don't do whatever you get fined for. But if you, the ways out of this problem is to, number one, find ways to do things more efficiently, and we're trying that as hard as we can, and even that's controversial, because sometimes you say do it with fewer people. Yeah, but the people whose jobs are on stake, they're not happy about that. Do it more efficiently. Well, I'm not so sure I want you to do that more efficiently if you capture me doing something I shouldn't be doing. Who wants that? But in the end, it is growing the economy. And New York City actually has done a very good job compared to the rest of the country. It's not that the recession didn't hurt us, but we never went down, and it was near what the prognosticators had expected, and we've come back faster. Part of that is we never had the second homes and spec home real estate bubble. Part of it is, go back to old Dan Doktoroff's five-borough economic diversification plan. You know, today there was still very dependent on finance, but there are lots of other industries here that keep people employed even in downtimes, health and fashion and technology and all of those things. We've got to grow our ways out of the problem, and we compete with other cities. We talked before about New Jersey trying to lure Hunts Point away. I think it'd be a terrible mistake for Hunts Point, because I think it would hurt their business, and I don't like the idea. You know, one state going and bribing a business to come in return for, because the trouble with that is the next state can do it too. Everybody can get in that game, and pretty soon it's a race for the bottom, and I don't think anybody benefits. But it is, we have to keep this economy growing. We have to make this place business friendly and people friendly. We have to have people who want to come here. Somebody tweeted me with the, you know, what incentives would you give to university graduates to stay here? You don't need incentives to stay here. Our problem is a lot of them get their degrees, and since they come, some of them come from overseas, and they can't stay here and they want to. And that's why we're trying to lure other universities here to complement our great universities. The more university students there are here, the more likely they are to start the next great businesses and create a lot of jobs. And somebody said to me, you know, oh, Boston's the college town, New York isn't. And so we did look at the numbers. There are more college students and graduate school students in New York City than there are people in Boston.
Oh, my goodness.
Just, I mean, because the scale of New York is so big. Having said that, Boston is a great place to live, and they're, you know, they're trying to keep businesses there and make it attractive. So we've got a safety, a public safety from terrorism, safety from street crime. Got to keep those things going and help the cultural institutions, public schools, you know, all of these things.
All right. Do you want to pick another number?
Absolutely. Ellen Queens, number one.
Number one. Ellen, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Mayor. May I ask your opinion or your help for my friend and neighbor? He came to New York 6 years ago, learned to read and write English, and he is now proud to be a New York City yellow cab driver. Unfortunately, he made a mistake. He overstayed his work visa, and we just learned that DMV won't renew his license due to his status. If you met this man, Mayor, you would recognize in him the goodness and the spirit of a hardworking immigrant. What can be done? He can't work now because he can't get a
Ellen, driver's. There's nobody that believes in immigration more than me. We built this country. I mean, I can't understand people that don't remember history. We built this country by having immigrants come here. We built this country by providing opportunity, and what sounds like this guy is hardworking and really cares and is doing the right thing. You know, the DMV is a state agency, and the federal government sets the immigration laws. State or city?
I think it's, which?
I think the DMV is a state.
State
laws.
Yeah.
You know, the cab stuff may be ours. But the bottom line is we need to get more sensible laws to let people come here and participate. Now, if somebody breaks the law, you know, in the end, whatever the laws are, we have to enforce them. But it's very sad when you meet somebody who you know would be a great citizen and the law doesn't let them. And keep in mind, the law, if you're going to have any laws at all, you got to have something to do it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're just about out of time here, so I'm afraid that there's no way that we can possibly get another.
No, but we can say enjoy a good Friday, happy Easter, happy Passover. Greek Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church, same weekend.
It's, that's unusual.
Yeah, it is unusual, and the Jewish Passover all at the same time.
All coming together at the same
I talked
point.
To the Archbishop of New York, and you know, he pointed out to everybody can celebrate,
and to
Muslims as well.
I had His Excellency on this morning with us on the program. Enjoy the weekend, and
hopefully
our local sports
teams. Knicks and Rangers,
yep.
Go.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. There's a lot more of me and us to continue here on this Friday. We're going to talk about the Dodgers in Los Angeles, Major League Baseball. Stick around.